be Saturday?
What day is it today?
Wednesday.
Exactly.
Welcome to Film Fight Club. I'm Falcon Stein from Falcon Screen. That was not Glenn Falcon Stein from Falcon Screen. And that was Chris Evans, freelance writer and critic and filmmaker.
Brittany Rue.
Brittany Rue, Sydney filmmaker. I screwed that one up.
It doesn't. It's all the same in the end.
It's all right. I would love to make movies, but I would probably be pretty bad at it. That's why I became a critic.
You should make movies. I think movies would be fun.
This is the story of all of our lives.
And here we are.
We have a token filmmaker. That is why we have you on
critic.
The panel, Chris.
I make films too, Varad. I'm right here.
But it raises a question. In this age of YouTube and your Snapchat and your Instagram stories, aren't we all filmmakers?
Exactly. Wait, are we filmmakers or content creators?
No, we are film. There is a distinction, I feel. You can be both. We are
content
connoisseurs. We are content critics. So, us
reviewing the latest content coming at you live from 2SER.
Yes. So, we are talking a lot of content this week. We are talking all things Sydney Film Festival. The Sydney Film Festival is coming up from the 5th to the 16th of June, and this is our annual, probably my favourite episode, the Clashes episode, where the program is out and we fight about what films we should see, what films we're just seeing, or
which films you should see.
Because there's so many and it's so packed and you can only see one at a time, maybe, unless you're just crazy Superman. So
exactly. You can only see one at a time. We get screeners. So
I want to know about the adventures of crazy Superman at Sydney Film Fest, where he sees every film.
That would be too much.
Do you think
much.
It's possible to see every film?
Superman could do this. Like, theoretically, he can jump between Dendy Opera Keys, Dendy Newtown, and the State Theatre quick enough to see everything.
And his mind, if he can just read the books, like, then his mind should be strong enough to withstand the turning to mush effect of watching 45 films in a row.
Except Out of Tango, because it's 7 hours long.
You think that could defeat Superman?
Possibly.
New Kryptonite. His Bellatar 7.5 hour epics.
Or never look away until he looks away.
I tell you what can defeat Superman. The vivid crowds. That can defeat Superman, because that's going to be insane.
Never Look Away is a great title for a movie that's over 3 hours long, because it's like there's no bathroom breaks in this one. You're not allowed to look away.
Yes.
Must be looking at the screen at all times.
At all times. So that is one film we will be reviewing in coming weeks. We are doing our Clashes episode. We will also be talking later in the episode and on the podcast, not just about Clashes, but the biggest film and television event of the week, which is the Game of Thrones series finale, which is out now. It will be a spoiler discussion, so you have been warned later in the episode. So let's get into our Sydney Film Festival Clashes. We've all kind of got our programs ready, got our flexi pass. We know what we kind of want to see. Is anyone going to see Palm Beach, the opening night flick? I'm going to the red carpet, but is anyone staying for the movie?
I can't really say I'm interested.
I'm seeing something much more interesting around the same time. That's my excuse.
Look, Palm Beach looks like an Australian film that might make money, so good for them there. But outside of that, I don't know. I feel like
it's going to play very well in Barron Joey Parade, where I used to live.
But more importantly, there's fewer and fewer films that play at the Sydney Film Festival that get an actual release in cinemas these days, as the exhibition industry is shrinking, right? But Palm Beach is guaranteed to play okay to the Northern Beaches sector.
Oh, yeah. Brian Brown, Sam Neill.
Cremorne Orpheum for 3 months. Lock
three
it
months.
In.
It's I the know. New... What's the one from 2006 that everyone went to see?
The Red Dog?
No. It went for
the
like
blue
2 years.
Cap to Darwin.
Sapphires.
No. 2006. With the guy from
Neighbors.
No, the Swedish
Home
Swedish
and Away.
Actor Michael Nyquist.
As It Is in Heaven.
As It Is in Heaven. It might be the new As It Is in
Maybe.
Heaven.
Maybe. Okay. I just don't see the urgency of seeing that at Sydney Film Festival.
No. So
As It Is in Heaven, definitely not.
So I'm actually tossing up between two films that night. Maybe you can help me decide. Seriously. One is Divine Love, which is the near future Brazilian sex sci-fi. And the other is Ghost Town Anthology, which is about a town where people start to, a very small town with 200 people, people start to come back to life.
I'm glad you asked this question.
Divine Love.
You see Divine Love, and then you see Ghost Town Anthology next Wednesday at 9 p.m., as I'll be doing, and I'll tell you why. Ghost Town Anthology, I think, will be good. I saw one of the director's previous films, I think it was called Vic and Flo Saw a Bear, at Sydney Film Festival in 2013 or 14. I thought that was not great, but really interesting, enough that I thought I'd watch any future film from that director. However, Divine Love, I think, is the more must-see film. The previous film from the director, Neon Bull, was my favorite film of the year it came out.
A 2016, big one at Sydney Film Festival.
Yeah, it was a fairly weak year in film for me, 2016. So Neon Bull was at the top for me. And Neon Bull featured, I think, the best sex scene I've seen in recent cinema. And now that director turning his gaze to an erotic sci-fi film, I think it sounds really interesting. Neon Bull was also, it was beautifully shot, and it was an interesting kind of inversion of the way that gender is usually depicted. A really fascinating
Not
film.
To raise any expectations any higher than they already are, Chris, but I did manage to catch Divine Love, and it is quite spectacular. In fact, I'm going to see it again because of that reason, because it deserves to be seen multiple times. It's quite fascinating. And there's a lot of neon in this movie as well.
Yeah, he's a really talented director, I think.
Really interesting framing, very Nicholas Winding Refn, actually, in that sense. A lot of comparisons with the neon demon are going to come up.
Oh, such a good movie. Such an underrated movie.
No.
So that is, yes, I will gladly fight about Neon Demon. So that is the Wednesday night, the 5th of June. Should we move on to the Thursday, the 6th of June? The one I'm really looking forward to that night is I Am Mother, which I would be seeing, but I think it is actually premiering on Netflix the next day. It's the Hilary Swank film about the robot which raises a young child. However, instead of that, I will be seeing a Cuban film, The Extraordinary Journey of Celeste Garcia, which is about aliens who come to Cuba. Some people think they're Russian, or they're not sure. Maybe they're aliens, maybe they're Russian. And then they find out that the aliens are inviting everyone, people who want, to come to their world. So it's
That's at 6:30, isn't it?
That's at 6:30. I think it's at Den de Opera Keys. Yes. So I'll be catching that one. There's a couple of others on at that time. Skin, the new film with Jamie Bell. Where he plays a reformed person who wants to remove all the tattoos from his body, but also The Souvenir. I know it's playing a few times throughout the festival, but that probably is the big ticket item for
the
that night.
The Souvenir, I heard, is fantastic.
Then
Skin,
that's the screening I'm catching on Thursday night.
As far as Skin goes, my reaction is somewhere between no and absolutely not.
Okay. So, how come? I'm curious. I'm not sold on this film, but I'm not as aesthetical to it either.
I heard about another film from this director. He made a short film, which is also playing at the festival. It's paired up with another film in the program, and it's also called Skin. And it's also about a skinhead and racist tattoos.
And you think he just expanded on that idea and then made a feature instead?
But the feature is based on a true story, so that makes it even more weird and confusing. Anyway, so the short, which is not based on a true story, but is also called Skin.
I guess you can say he's got a lot of skin in the game.
Yeah, a film's called Skin.
Yeah.
Especially at Sydney Film Festival 2019. That short sounds so terrible that even if he's kept from going in such an obvious direction by the narrative framework of a real-life story, I do not trust this guy's instincts in making a film about racism and a film that's meant to send a message to the audience at all. I think it's going to be so incredibly heavy-handed.
Okay, so that is Skin. The other one, which I'm actually catching the following day, is The Souvenir, the Tilda Swinton film, the sequel of which I understand involves Robert Pattinson, which I'm quite keen to find. I just read the description, and yep, I'm sold immediately. This is one of the, I think, major items that will premiere at the festival.
Hang on, The Souvenir?
The Souvenir.
Right.
Yes, it's a double film by Joanna Hogg. I think the other installment's coming out at a later date. In terms of later that night, what am I doing later that night? I really don't think, actually, yeah, later that night, I'm not so, yeah, I might actually, although The Wind, I'm seeing The Wind. The Wind is part of the Freak Me Out section, which is set on the Western Frontier. And it is a horror film involving the woman who moves to that area. And I'm always sold on the Freak Me Out section. A lot of the films that are in the rest of the program are very much along those lines too. So they've clearly would have to have gone all out to find films that will appeal to that genre crowd, the dedicated genre crowd who comes to the Sydney Film Festival every year to catch those
dedicated?
Ones.
Are dedicated? Are they Jedi?
Is that what I said?
Yeah, dedicated.
I've had Star Wars in mind recently, excuse me. But yes, I will be at The Wind. I'm trying to catch every single Freak Me Out film with the possibility, maybe not in fabric, we'll talk about that in a moment, but I will be seeing The Wind on Thursday night.
As an aside, how much does The Souvenir sound like an education? Let's hope it's better than that.
I love the education.
No, that was a bad film.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Glenn. It was bad.
No.
It was
lousy.
Okay, we're going to fight about this.
It was all based on... Okay, Carrie Mulligan was fine, but it was all based on one lousy, not-so-significant twist that wasn't significant to the story.
That's all that matters. Carrie Mulligan is amazing in a film, and the film is singularly better.
It was so blunt force. There was no subtlety to it.
So was Wildlife. That was pretty...
I didn't like Wildlife either.
Yes, let's compare it to Wildlife. Yes. No, never a good sign.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
So
agree to disagree on that one, guys.
All right. Now, 7 o'clock. On the 7th of June, my Sydney Film Festival journey starts at 3:45 in the afternoon with Angelo, which is a drama about an African man who is taken from Africa and raised in European nobility. I found this topic quite interesting, which I'll be seeing. But I think Chris may be one of a number of people who may be otherwise occupied, not just for those hours, but the many hours preceding this film.
Yeah, I think I will be doing the all-night cinema love-in.
That's
the following night.
No, this is the Friday.
No, we're talking about Satatango, dude.
They're already blurring together
in my mind because, you know, it's like I'm already just dreading it. Like, how am I going to survive having gone through a 7.5-hour movie and then the next day, even if I get to have a break, then I start at 9:30 a.m. on the Saturday and I watch like 5 movies that day, then go into a four-film cinema marathon from 10 p.m. at night, Chris, and one of them is 3 hours long.
Chris will transform into movies. Like, we won't know Chris. It's just going to be Eraserhead meets In the Realm of the Senses.
I would love to see that love child, you know, Eraserhead meeting love In the Realm of the Senses.
Are you going to go to the all-night cinema love-in?
I'm tempted.
I think you'll see that love child in your mind's eye.
Wait. And that's on the Saturday night?
It's on the Saturday night in Newtown. But things I want to see Eraserhead. The others are not sold on. And I know I'm going to be wrecked for the Sunday and probably the Monday if I do that.
That's part of the thrill of it. It's like the trenches from Nam.
Can you imagine
we're going to have flashbacks?
Can you imagine walking home at like 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning, having, like going to Guzman and Gomez for breakfast?
Trenches
having
of seen... Nam. What am I talking about?
Wow.
Sorry, Guzman and Gomez at 7 a.m.?
They'll
be open, right?
Is this starting on Saturday night or starting on Friday
starting
night?
Starting Saturday night.
It goes into Sunday.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm seeing 4 on Sunday and 4 on Monday, so I probably would be dead, so I shouldn't be doing this to myself.
Yeah, but you have to. That's the rule.
But you have to. We have to. But we're jumping ahead because we're still on the Friday.
Yeah.
Look, I'm curious about Satatango. Convince me. You're going to do it.
Well, how often do you get the opportunity to watch a 7.5-hour film that people consider good? I know I've sold it so well.
The last season of Game of Thrones.
It's not a film, though.
But actually...
Film and cinema debate reignites here at Film Fight Club. Is television cinema... No.
But actually, Chris, you got to realize you're talking to someone who left me like 10 minutes in the Vampire Hotel, which screened at, you know, Cian Sodo.
Sydney Underground Film Festival.
Sydney Underground
We're
Film
still
Festival.
Still on this. It's been 18 months.
But, you know, you have shown no remorse.
I watched another movie.
You have no remorse. You have shown no actual corrective measures.
You had a dumb finished time travel thing, didn't you?
Yeah. I'm just glad Virat told me it was 4 hours.
Exactly.
I watched
you couldn't last 4 hours. You just lasted 10
time
minutes.
Time travel movie.
How could you last 7.5 hours? That's what I'm trying to say. You couldn't even last 4 hours.
Well, no.
You couldn't sit still for like an elephant, unlike last year.
Well, I'm not doing Santa Tag because that night, I'm actually tossing it up still. I'm just trying to decide between the new Almodovar, Pain and Glory, and In Fabric.
Well, I think you've got to go with Almodovar because a lot of people are saying this is one of his best films. Almodovar is a legend, and I think when he's at his best, he's churning out classics. And Peter Strickland, I find a lot more hit and miss. I think the only argument I could see for choosing In Fabric over the Almodovar is that Almodovar is such a legend that this film, especially with its positive critical reception, should get a decent cinematic release.
It will. It'll be
even,
a palace in
You know,
Dendi,
like Julieta,
sure.
Like Boxing Day, Julieta took that release date last year.
By all accounts, it's much better than Julieta.
But the thing is, like, you guys may not have to choose because In Fabric is already sold out.
Right. But then you always go on the app and tickets change and sometimes like one ticket becomes available.
You can find a spot. And at the Dendy Newtown, they're not seated. It's just general admission.
Yeah.
I'm really curious about In Fabric because the very oblique trailer leaves a lot to be curious about. This has Gwendolyn Christie. And for those who are disappointed with the later season of Game of Thrones, as we will get into, you may find something that you might enjoy more featuring Brienne of Tarth.
I find Peter Strickland to be too calculated and too cold to have a really worked.
I like Duke of Burgundy, which was nice.
Yeah, I just don't think that his stuff succeeds as a horror movie instead of just as like a pastiche and a parody of horror movies.
But that's still more ambitious than a lot of people. As people would say, elevated horror, which is the new kind of buzzword in studios.
Speaking of elevated horror, what's more elevated than the top of a lighthouse? Zing, segue. Do you think that we're going to get late editions that mess up all of our fine-tuning the program we're doing right now?
If the Lighthouse comes after the reviews it has gotten, I'll be very happy with mixing up my program to go see another Arpats film. Also starring Willem Dafoe, but all accounts the performances are excellent.
I reckon we'll be seeing Portrait of a Young Girl on Fire.
Or Vivanium. Possibly Vivanium, the Jesse Eisenberg film. Hopefully Maybe. The Terrence Malick film, A Hidden Life.
Hopefully the
No.
Hopefully Tarantino too.
We won't get Tarantino. Tarantino's upset about spoilers, so that tells me that he doesn't want any early screenings outside of the Cannes Film Festival.
I don't think he's completed the final version of the film that he wants to
Oh, he definitely hasn't.
It's close.
He wants to premiere it at Cannes. He wants to premiere during the festival.
25 years to the day after Pulp Fiction came out. Outside of that, he wouldn't break the idea of screening it only in August or July.
I'm saying no to Malick because I don't think Malick is someone who would like to do screeners.
But it doesn't matter anymore. Fox Searchlight bought the rights to the film for between 12
and
14.
I'm glad they still exist.
Yeah. Think about that. Walt Disney is going to release the new Terrence Malick film. Anyway, they could easily...
Do you like Disney now? Is that what you're saying, Chris?
No, I don't. I don't. Okay.
Are you sure?
You like him a little more, I think.
What if they release the next David Lynch film?
What if they do? It would be very strange.
But would you like them then?
I would be happy that someone within that system was being given the free rein enough to do something like that.
Art.
But yeah, if Fox decide they want to screen it at the film festival to build up some hype, why not? It could easily happen.
Power to them. So that is the Friday night, except also later that Friday night, I will be catching Enzeit Ever After, which is a German film the director will be coming out, and it is a eco-zombie thriller. Again, it sounds like Game of Thrones, but it does. The description looks really great.
I think zombies have finished. You know, like, I can't even get excited about Jim Jarmusch's
really good.
Oh, really? I've heard a few people mention that.
There is another interesting clash on Friday night, which is The Final Quarter, which is the Adam Goetz documentary, versus the new Alex Ross Perry, Her Smell, at the Ritz.
Well, I'm seeing Her Smell next Wednesday. I'm looking forward to the new Elizabeth Moss film. I'm curious about the Adam Goetz film. I'm a casual AFL fan, but I've certainly followed the Adam Goetz debate.
Hang on, how are you seeing this next Wednesday?
Her Smell is playing Wednesday night. Sorry, Wednesday the 12th, excuse me. I'm seeing it the following Wednesday. I'm not seeing it this Wednesday. Yes, we are. This is obviously Sydney Film Festival is still a couple of weeks away. We all have to sort out our schedules because things are booking up.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Adam Goetz documentary. So you'll be seeing, this is certainly one of the most promoted films of the festival. Like, this may be the film that locally gets the most coverage given the subject matter.
Her Smell is getting a video on demand release very soon. In fact, probably would be already out on video on demand by the time Sydney Film Festival is live. So there's other ways of watching that, even though it's very good from all reports. Critic friends of ours have recommended this movie quite strongly. They've repped, like, you know, pretty loose with this film.
I've heard that too, and this is the ostensible Courtney Love biopic, or loosely based on her life?
No, a character inspired by her.
Okay.
So The Final Quarter would be interesting to watch, because I think it's, you know, we don't get to see those kind of docos, especially sports docos, on Australian figures at all.
No, we don't. No, we don't. All right. So that is the Friday night. Moving on to Saturday, 8th of June, getting into the long weekend. The Souvenir is that morning. I actually might be catching that session. I'm seeing A Tale of Three Sisters at midday. There's two Turkish films this year. They both look really good. The other one is Sybil. This one has fantastical elements to it. It is about three sisters who defy their quite conservative father.
I'll be there at the Tale of Three Sisters as well, but it's clashing with another one that I want to see, which is the Steve Bannon documentary, The Brink, at Denry Upper Keys. So,
how much do you want to spend that much time with Steve Bannon?
That's the thing.
I'm like, look, I hate, you know, all that he stands for, but which is why I want to understand it and I want to spend time with it. I think that's the appeal, isn't it?
You should watch his movies. He's actually was a Hollywood producer before he went into politics. He made a film with Sean Penn.
Are you talking about Harvey Weinstein or
No,
Steve
he has
Bannon?
A film later in the festival, Untouchable.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about Steve Bannon.
Is Untouchable playing at the festival?
Yeah.
Yes, Monday night.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Monday night, Monday 4 p.m. I think I'm definitely going to that one.
We'll talk about the clash because I've got that up as well.
Oh, I thought you meant Untouchable, like remake of
The Untouchables.
Yeah.
No, Untouchable, no, Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, but he also released a movie called Untouchable with Bryan Cranston.
No.
He did. That was a Weinstein project as well. Oh. Which adds extra irony to choosing that title.
Okay.
The Bryan Cranston and Kevin Hart remake of The Untouchables, the French movie.
Oh, they made it Untouchables?
Yeah.
Oh, the Untouchables. Oh, right. Sorry.
Untouchable, you know, just means untouchable. But
yes.
Because of confusion with the Brian De Palma Al Capone movie with Sean Connery, they changed the title to the horrendous multilingual mix-up, The Untouchables.
I remember seeing the
You can't
poster
touch him,
for that.
Jim. He's untouchable.
I'm not looking forward to it. I really liked the original. I was really fond of the original. But yeah, Kevin Hart?
So he remade
Kevin
it
Hart?
Untouchable.
Really?
I'm pretty sure it's Kevin Hart and Bryan Cranston.
Okay, I think...
Oh, no, it's not. It's Chris Tucker.
No, I think... Are you sure, dude?
I'm pretty sure it's Chris Tucker.
All right, we'll come back to that in a moment. I'm not seeing the brig because I don't need more of Steve Bannon in my life.
Okay, but I feel the biggest clash of all of this entire Sydney Film Festival is these two big movies.
Check, Chris.
You know, first one, Animals versus Blinded by the Light.
Oh, okay.
The two biggest movies at the Sydney Film Fest. Which is going to be the biggest crowd pleasers.
Well, Animals has...
Or the worst.
I'm so sorry, I've forgotten her name. Maybe from Arrested Development.
Oh, hang on.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so it was called Untouchable, but they changed the name to The Upside.
Oh, no.
Just and go watch Kevin. It was Kevin Hart and Bryan Cranston.
Go watch the French movie. It's good. It's really good. Omar Sy. He's
thinking
great.
I was of Harvey Weinstein movies, and I thought of Chris Tucker in Silver Linings Playbook. And somehow crossed the wires.
That was a great movie. That was a good movie. All right, moving back to Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, back to Animals versus Blinded by the Light.
All right, Blinded by the Light is Virat's new favorite movie. No. Okay. Blinded by the Light
just
is...
Get out of here, Glenn. Just leave right now.
So this has been heavily publicized by the festival team. This is the one about a young Pakistani-British man who is raised by a very conservative family.
Can there ever be progressive liberal Indian families?
Pakistani, family, but notably, it is from the director of Bennett Like Beckham.
To be fair, they're all the same. You know, Indian, Pakistanis, we're kind of like the same people.
Okay. And the person who made
I love
Bennett
how
like
Glenn
Beckham.
Completely sidestepped that. That was very smooth.
And
very subtle, guys.
And he falls for Bruce Springsteen's music in a big, big way, the way I fell for Elton John's music. When I was a little bit younger than this character.
But you want to see Animals, Glenn?
No, I'm seeing The Elephant Queen. Wait, what time is Blinded by the Light on?
This is all 8:30. This is both 8:30.
Oh, Saturday night. Oh, we've jumped way ahead. Wait, is this Saturday?
Yeah, 8 June.
Oh, okay. Okay, forget the afternoon. Blinded by the Light. What am I seeing that night? I am seeing... Well, I was thinking of The All Night Sin 11, which I'm not convinced on yet. Maybe American Woman, the new Sienna Miller film. It's a film. It's a thriller. Animals... I think I'm actually seeing that later in the program. I do want to see it because I like Ali Shawkat. So that's not too much of a contentious night for me.
I'm very hesitant because I really did not enjoy the director's first film, 52 Tuesdays, which was just aimless hipster photography. So fingers crossed for Animals to be more substantial, I guess.
I do hope so. I know some of the filmmaking crew are coming out for that one. So there's The All Night Sin 11. And what else that afternoon? Kursk is playing that afternoon, which is the Matthias Schoenaerts, Colin Firth, Lea Seydoux film about the submarine disaster. I think it was 2003. So I'll probably be catching that one.
It's going to be, I think, total middle brow, Zentropa, Anders Thomas Jensen, Thomas Vinterberg, etc. Who cares? In my opinion, I think it'll be like a TV movie.
No, I lie. I lie. I'm actually not seeing it because I'm seeing the film with the best description of the whole festival. It is a film from Sudan called Akasha. It is about a soldier who loves nothing more than his AK-47, who loses his AK-47 and, to not get in trouble, has to go on the run from the army with a pacifist. I think that's the best description I've seen for a movie out of how many are playing at the Sydney Film Festival.
Isn't that just Monos?
No. Isn't that about... Is that a young
group of
young men?
It's also about child soldiers losing their toys and then getting angry.
But I think this is more of a comedy.
Monos?
No, as in Akasha. Okay. It looks more like a comedy.
I think Monos might be a comedy, but a different type, unintentionally.
We've got about 5 minutes left. We're going to talk more about the Sydney Film Festival clashes on the podcast. However, Before we do, we want to talk about the series final of Game of Thrones. The discussion that we'll have in the next few minutes, we'll keep it broad. It won't be a spoiler discussion. We'll talk about the series as a whole, but then come this podcast, we will be talking spoilers. The final episode, The Iron Throne, aired on Monday. The mixed result, it is one of the three major franchises of time, not the three major franchises of our time that are ending this year, including Marvel, MCU, Phase 4, etc., and Star Wars Episode 9. Which will screen later in the year. I have very mixed feelings about this latest episode of Game of Thrones. I feel it was emblematic of the terrible storytelling where it was wrapped up all too quickly. However, I enjoyed the opportunity to spend time with the characters, just like we got to do in the first two episodes of this season.
Look, before I completely, poo on this, let me just say that I'm kind of thankful looking back that this is one of those prestige TV dramas, which I don't know when is the next one we're going to get it. This is like The Sopranos. This is
it's
like
not going to happen again.
The Wire. You know, like a big television drama event, which has united audiences all over the world.
Lord of the Rings, Witcher.
I don't think those will get there. One, there's too much of this scent of, everyone's cashing in on the trend. It's like they were in the wave of Harry Potter-esque movies that came out for kids.
Oh, yes. Do the Golden Compass right, damn it.
Yeah.
But also,
that's being done. There's an HBO Golden Compass series that's being shown on HBO.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, right, excuse me.
It looks actually very good.
All right. And there's the new Artemis Fowl coming out.
Yeah. Look, none of these things will catch on to the extent that Game of Thrones did, because I think they all feel a little bit been there, done that now. And I think there's actually going to be, I think by the looks of it, quite a backlash against Game of Thrones. A lot of people are unsatisfied by the ending.
I know. Like, before we get on to that, like, I just want to say that actually I'm pretty thankful, because this doesn't happen, especially in how cynical and how much media we consume these days, and how, like, we don't give it a chance to really grow on us. For 8 seasons, for this kind of worldwide television phenomena to exist, which has united people from all over the world. Like, even back in India, where, people don't watch HBO TV shows. People know about Game of Thrones like the back of their hand. So it's interesting to see how it's, transcended cultural barriers, languages, countries, demographics, and it's united people from different ways. So that is something to celebrate.
Matt Zolasites wrote an interesting comment about it, which might account for some of that, which is that, especially in the early show, the storytelling feels very primeval almost, that it's so dark and so savage in the turns. And
For that simple reason,
the basics.
It was endearing because everyone goes on about how individual characters, there's no safe characters, you can't die, but it means that for once that there's no character who is always required to see a story through, that real-life consequences feel more palpable. Mm. And to that effect, in the early seasons when characters did suffer gruesome ends or gruesome events, it felt that it was because of a fatal flaw they had. And I really enjoyed that. In the later series, it's very much because the story necessitated it. It was a plot necessitated. An entire season arcs were shepherded into individual episodes or less, which will be frustrating no end to people now or who discover the series in the decades to come.
I know. I mean, it is what it is. The writing did kind of was a letdown. But without getting into that, actually giving it time to breathe, I actually realized what it's accomplished. And I think it's quite rare. So I wanted to acknowledge that before I jump into a critical diatribe.
Yeah, I think we're not going to have another series like this, not just because of the scale of it, but because of the way that people watch this week by week over 8 years. I think it's harder to get everyone excited about the same plot developments when people are streaming shows at their own pace these days.
Think about, Chris and I will still, we can get when we make a joke about The Simpsons. Yep. We know. And Game of Thrones has that same cachet. I don't think there's anything quite else like that. Arrested Development, Breaking Bad, maybe The Wire. I don't think there's going to be something in the foreseeable future, if for a long time, which will be so uniformly watched and revered. And for all the faults of the last two seasons, I would say, it is still grand storytelling. And it is incredible, as this episode did, to contrast how far we have come from the first season, because the actors have changed, we've changed. The people I watched Game of Thrones with 8 years ago, I don't watch it with now, some I still do. I relish that, I cherish that.
Oh, yeah, I've lost some real friendships because of Game of Thrones. I mean, there was friendships on the line when people told me spoilers I didn't want to know.
So it happened. We're almost out of time. Stay tuned for The Sonic Assassin. We will be talking next week with Sydney Film Festival director Nashan Moodley about the program, and the festival will start the week after that. We'll also be covering Rocketman, the new Elton John biopic In brief, that we will be focusing still on our coverage of the Sydney Film Festival. Stay tuned for the podcast. We'll be talking all things Sydney Film Festival clashes and Game of Thrones spoilers. This has been Glenn Falkenstein, Chris Evans, and Virat Nehru. In a Westeros, stay chilled.
Vargallus, all men must die.
Enjoy movies. Valamagulis.
Enjoy life.
And good night.
Drogon.
And welcome back to the Film Fight Club podcast. Ah, okay. Now, do you want to continue with Game of Thrones or do we want to get back to Sydney Film Festival clashes?
No, let's finish our chain of thought with Game of Thrones. Let's give it a proper send-off.
Okay. Right, this is spoilers. This is spoilers territory for the entire series of Game of Thrones, okay. Including the last episode. You have been warned.
This isn't really a spoiler comment. This is just outsider commentary.
You can spoil now. It's okay.
How funny is it that...
How funny is it?
A lot of people...
Yeah, Chris is one of those...
A lot of people are theorizing that... This last season, maybe the last two seasons, were very rushed because the showrunners were keen to wrap up their work on Game of Thrones so they could start writing the more lucrative job on the thing they're more interested in with Star Wars. How funny is it going to be if they follow in the footsteps of Colin Trevorrow after the Book of Henry and the Lego movie guys, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, to be fired from... their new Star Wars movie on account of the backlash.
Look, they could have taken on that. They could have taken an extra season. People would have been fine with spending an extra year with these characters. But there were only so many episodes left to tell a story. And the problem with that is there's all these very key plot lines which are absolutely put by the wayside. Certainly the Jon's direwolf, that storyline did eventuate. But what really got me was the magic of the world, the religion, institutional memory, which you've gotten to know over several years, which was completely gone. What about the other red priestesses? What were they doing? What power did Rolor have? What power does the Weirwitchery have? Really, what was... did the White Walkers really come all that way just to kill Bran and wait 8,000 years and just amass that incredible army just to do that? I don't think so. I think there was probably more to it than
not
that.
Not at all. I mean, and that's the other thing, right? I mean... guys, by the way, Bran is king, you know.
We'll get into that.
No, but like, you know, just to preface that, how disappointing is that shit? Like, honestly, like, just that. Not only how that was proposed, but how completely shoddily that whole thing was handled. Even though Sam just brings up a notion of democracy, which is then laughed at,
that was pretty funny. That, yep.
But just like with Bran, like he's all-knowing, which is kind of interesting to think about. You know, what is Game of Thrones trying to convey? That human failings and the fact that human beings are not good enough to rule, so we need some kind of omniscient, omnipresent being, almost like the three-eyed raven, in human form to rule over us, because human beings are not trustworthy to rule because we can betray each other and we have our
authoritarian
human
authoritarian anti-communist television on a grand scale as global propaganda.
It is interesting because
in the beginning with the Targaryen and when Dany was there, you had the same flags which were harking back to Nuremberg, and you know, it was quite obvious the imagery.
And the First Order.
And then eventually you end up choosing a kind of ruler who is very much very autocratic in that sense. Not that he wanted to rule in the first place. Bran was like, I don't want anything. And he was just still be like, oh, by the way, do you want to be king? He's like, oh, okay then.
But you know what it was? It was plutocratic. It was the republic. It was the idea of the only people, and it was
you're the only one who believes that, too,
that suddenly if you don't want to rule, you'll be less corrupted and you should be the person to rule. There was an amazing analysis I saw today about...
Oh, great. I don't want to be fat, so I should eat more food.
Was
like, what is that kind of logic?
The Iron Throne and the One Ring, where it's this one thing that corrupts and that Dany, when she finally got it, was killed, and then it itself was destroyed in flames. I found that really, really interesting.
Honestly, the only person, and there's a meme about this, that showed the most amount of growth in this episode was Drogon. He deals with loss the most mature way possible.
By wrecking the furniture.
By wrecking the thing that corrupted, and then quietly taking away, you know, and not unleashing savagery onto other people. So a dragon has more sense and more emotional quotient and growth than a lot of human beings in the show, which is kind of fascinating to think about.
More specifically, where is Drogon? Where did he go?
Hey,
he's just kind of hanging out. This is really
like
concerning.
Up and left.
This dragon's just up and around. Yeah. All right. So Look, what really got me about this episode, and we talked last week about what I really liked about the second to last episode, was that it reckoned for the first time in a long time with the people of the world, and not just the high and noble lords, but more importantly, it situated those lords and ladies in the same position of the quote-unquote common folk, who suddenly, in the presence of war, also had nowhere to run, were equally affected. I really liked that. This episode, there's one shot of a common folk, and then the rest of the episode, that's what they call them in the show, and the rest of the episode is all about...
Very democratic.
The rest of the episode is all about the people, the lords, laughing about democracy, and then just casually talking about brothels when the rest of the city is still obviously clearly suffering. And how is it that the people who were responsible for what happened, Tyrion included, he was Daenerys' hand, be put in these positions of power? Okay, sure, it's all nice to say, all right, he'll spend the rest of his life making up for it. But surely there's a lot of the several thousand citizens of Westeros, or of King's Landing, left who might just think, no, I don't like this guy. I'm pretty sure I could take him out.
Pretty much. And, like, Tyrion is one of the worst. I mean, firstly, he calls Bran Broken Bran, which I was not pretty
happy
about.
That
wasn't
nice. You could have called him, like, you know,
And then Sansa talking about how Bran has a broken dick. Anyway, so there was a lot of those references which weren't that funny. But anyway, I'm still wondering whether they're going to build a ramp for Bran to get around. So that's something which is unsolved. So I don't know how it's going to be disability friendly, which is necessary because now he's king. He probably can build one for himself.
Well, there actually was a Targaryen prince who... was an imsil who had the same situation Bran did, and they built Jaehaerys. They did set up some things to make it a little more accessible, the palace and the King's Landing a little more accessible. So we hope they would continue with that. But more importantly, the whole thing with Sansa and taking the North as an independent kingdom, fine, sure. But Dorne just sitting there, like the biggest isolationists of this entire realm, and they must be thinking, hold on, hell no. We're going to be our own kingdom too. And suddenly the Reach and everyone else must be thinking, look, if they can do it, I know the North have been through a lot,
exactly.
But if they can do it, we can do it. And what army is going to stop us? What army do you have to stop us right now declaring our independence?
Exactly. I mean, you don't really have a kingdom to rule over to begin with. I mean, it's fascinating to see. I don't know what people are thinking. But the other funny bits. Okay, Brienne becoming the world's first blogger. That is
the best memes have arisen around that.
Yeah.
Oh my god!
You know, yeah. about how she's just dealing with her broken heart by writing the story about Jaime the Brave and how he left me to be with his queen, his first true love. Oh my god!
Right.
And I was just like, there's better ways to get over heartbreak. Honestly, don't write a book.
All right, no, I'm going to defend that bit. See, here's the thing: there are two moments in the show which were blatant fan service to the effect of how epic a story Game of Thrones is. One is the speech which Tyrion uses to justify Bran's ascension, saying he has the best story, which he doesn't, and also it's a terrible metatextual thing to say. Secondly, the awful, cringeworthy moment where Sam puts down a song of ice and fire. No, don't do that to us. We don't need that in our lives.
Wink.
But the moment where Brienne said, now I'm going to reckon with my history and my memory of Jaime and record these deeds, recalling back to that terrible scene where Joffrey was goading Jaime at the beginning of season 4, that was quite elegant. I feel that was one of the moments where the show actually reckoned with the breadth of what it had done and how many seasons that had elapsed. And I actually quite liked that. It gave Brienne a much better ending than what we thought we'd seen the last of her in the third to last episode when Jaime rode back to King's Landing.
I know, but like, what is she going to write? Be like, oh yeah, you know, we had some sexy times, but then he kind of left me, and now I'm sad.
No, she wrote about River Run. She wrote about the lives he saved. She wrote about him riding north to defend the living. She wrote about good things.
Yeah, he rode north to save the living, and he left me all alone and sad and miserable.
That's awful, but then that's not what she wrote.
I'm sure she wrote that. It was a long book. We only got to see snapshots of it. I'm sure there are chapters and chapters and chapters about that.
What's the name of the book? It has a great title. It's like the King something something. Something something. All right, so the rest of the episode, look, a lot of it didn't make sense. A lot of it was rushed. I liked the resolution of the Jon storyline. It was a bit bittersweet how he went back to the wall, mirroring his storyline with Aemon Targaryen, his great-great uncle, who was a fixture of the show and certainly who had a very pivotal scene with Jon in the first season, in the 9th episode.
But Jon being a Targaryen was a pure plot device. It didn't make any difference in the end.
Except it did nicely mirror his relationship with Aemon, who is one of the most interesting characters in the books and the show, to be fair. So I didn't mind that. It didn't have the impact it necessarily needed to. But the other thing I will say about Jon is people will be angry with him for killing Daenerys, but you know what? This has happened before. He's chosen, as Aemon said to him, you have to choose love and duty. He chose duty over love when he didn't ride south to protect Robb. He chose duty over love when he didn't run away with Ygritte and step back to the Night's Watch, and he's done it for a third time. So that it actually was quite a good resolution to Jon's arc. I was very happy with that.
Oh, but it was so heavy-handed. I mean, they were just like orgasmically stabbing each other.
That's not what happened at all.
Well, I don't know. It was kind of orgasmic stabbing.
They were embracing and he stabbed her. And there was a moment where we weren't sure who had died, and then it became apparent that it was Daenerys. And sure, that trope has been done quite a bit, but yeah. I like the staging of that sequence. I didn't mind it at all.
Yeah, well, you know, there are worse ways to kill someone.
So, yeah, as we've seen in the show, what else do we want? Like, Game of Thrones, look, for all the faults of this episode and the last few, it's still...
Jon and Tormund make the best couple. I think that's what we've established.
We need more Tormund in our lives. That guy's a legend.
I know. Brienne should get over Jaime and be with Tormund. But he respects a big lady.
But she's not interested in Tormund.
I know. She should get over Jaime and be interested in him. That's the whole point. Stop writing this book.
No, Brienne is the commander of the Kingsguard. Therefore, she can take no lands and not marry, etc., etc., etc.
Doesn't need to get married. She just needs to get Jaime out of her system so that she can stop writing this bloody book.
So I don't think she's going to spend that much time in his book. She has a lot more defending of Bran to do. You can't be a very popular king. No one is very popular in this king universe anymore. So look, there was a lot more we wanted to know about this universe. We will learn more about it from the books. For all its faults, Game of Thrones has given us so much to relish and discuss and be a part of a cultural phenomenon for so many years. I'm glad that I was able to sit there and enjoy it with so many friends and still talk about it with so many mates. Is there anything else we want to cover about Game of Thrones while we're on it?
No, I mean, it's just fascinating to see how much of a cultural phenomenon it's become and how every Monday people would just be like, no spoilers. And like, we would wait for a year or two or three sometimes to kind of just, you know, that kind of loyalty towards one show is unprecedented. I don't think it's going to come by.
I know that people need their big spectacles to rally behind, but with the ending of Game of Thrones and Avengers Endgame, it feels like it could be a long time before everyone... in the culture, it seems, is interested in some level.
Rise of Skywalker?
Maybe. But Star Wars, I don't know, the brand feels kind of tarnished already. Like, it doesn't have that same kind of mass interest.
I'm really holding out for this Lord of the Rings series. I think that could be potentially spectacular. Amazon is spending $1 billion on it.
But I feel like... No,
so it's going to be really bad.
But also, like...
I'm reminded of a joke a long time ago. I saw someone saying, like, imagine what a movie that cost $1 billion would look like. And the answer would be absolutely terrible.
I think there's a Mad Magazine sketch about that with James Cameron.
Yeah.
But it's interesting also, like, you know, the age group. Like, we were that ripe old age where we could get behind a cultural phenomena. And now we're wise old cynics who...
Our job is to disagree.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, a whole... So I guess whatever is the next generation's soul or, you know, food for soul or movies for soul, they'll have to find for themselves. Hopefully it's not Aladdin. Hopefully it's not the Will Smith Aladdin, but if it is, or if it is a live action version of The Lion King, good on them. You know, they deserve it.
It's not a live action. I don't see any live action. I just see animals CGI'd.
Lion
animated.
King, yeah. Anyway, it's probably only a very small percentage is filmed.
It's strange. I was actually in Northern Ireland when I discovered Game of Thrones because people were talking about it there, and this was just as the series was starting. And I went back to Ireland this year. Well, obviously, it had a lot of cultural cachet. People were talking about it, and people in the industry were very active in the series or had been very active in the series. So it has brought a lot of attention to that part of the world. And I do hope that films continue to be filmed there and interest in tourism continues to thrive. But yeah, I... don't know what to say. Actually, while we're on the matter of spoilers, can we just talk about... It's interesting how Endgame and Game of Thrones has led to a real resurgence of how we treat spoilers. And I've been really frustrated because spoiler isn't just saying, without warning, that Jon kills Daenerys. A spoiler is a lot of things. Showing, for instance, as a friend pointed out to me last night at the kino event we went to, showing Jon hanging out with the direwolf is a spoiler because it says that Jon goes north. And you pretty much put the two and two together, referring to character deaths or referring to, oh, I can't believe they did that regarding this character. That's a spoiler. And I think people are getting more sensitive to it. I don't think you need to not have spoilers to not enjoy something. So I don't think you can still enjoy something if you had something spoiled for you. But I think we really need to be careful about how we treat spoilers, because I've seen publications that I know will just put a spoiler in an image or the headline, and it's never okay.
It is not. And there is a great scene in a wonderful, wonderful romantic comedy which is out in cinemas right now called Long Shot, which is riffing on this very idea with Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen, where Charlize Theron's character is talking about how she has seen the Game of Thrones series because she reads the synopses and the plot lines. And Seth Rogen is like, no, that doesn't mean you've seen it. And then she's like, no, I know all the things that happen. And he's like, that doesn't mean anything. You haven't experienced it. So she watches an episode and she's like, oh my God, I knew it, but I didn't really realize I've seen it. Anyway, it's one of those interesting kind of, you know, watching a show versus really spoiling a show, but what does it mean kind of thing moments in a pretty heartfelt rom-com. Coming back to Game of Thrones, yeah.
Do you want to give us a Long Shot review? I haven't seen it.
It's actually genuinely heartfelt and funny and surprisingly invested in its characters, and it's quite politically relevant than I realized it would be. The jokes are genuinely subversive in some moments. It is the least Seth Rogen movie I've seen, and I mean that in a very good way. And Charlize Theron is fantastic, and she's such... she's a literal god in this movie, in not only how she is acting and portrayed, but just like, you know, she is 15 and Seth Rogen is a 2, and you're just like, oh my God, how is this even working out? And for majority of the runtime of the movie, you're just in awe of that, that something or someone decided to put these two together in the same frame. And
it sounds like a terrible decision.
I know, but it is just like, oh my God. Anyway, but yeah, it's surprisingly genuinely heartfelt and funny, and has some really interesting things to say about contemporary culture, especially the Me Too movement, and also election of a kind of, you know, very on-the-nose, celebrity-hungry president in the United States, which we know about. So there are a lot of contemporary pop culture references and, you know, position of women in power and stuff like that, which is also interesting. Very hilarious cameo by Lisa Kudrow, which I would definitely, you know, blink and miss, but she has a very good scene in that.
Okay, so Long Shot is in cinemas now. Let's get back to talking all things Sydney Film Festival. What's my next one? I think we're on
Chris,
Sunday
this
afternoon.
This is where you come back in.
Yeah, Chris. Yeah, Chris. Chris is one
Hello,
of those people
Chris.
Who
hey
was
guys.
All.
Are you still here?
Yeah. Chris is always one of those people who's like, I stopped watching Game of Thrones, yeah. And now there's no cachet in saying that anymore because everyone's like, yeah, I'm not watching Game of Thrones because of the series.
It's not on anymore.
Yeah. And because the. Yeah.
Whatever.
So. And we also ruined it for Chris. So, yeah. All right. Sydney Film Festival. The next film
is 11th of June. This
11th
is the one
of June.
We were talking about.
We're jumping ahead.
Yeah, but because, you know, the 9th and 10th is fine. 11th, this is the big one, I feel. X by Chelsea versus Kirk's.
Not High Life. Not Untouchable. Like, all these films were just. X by Chelsea.
I would. Look, I'm probably not going to see either, but I would definitely go and see X by Chelsea. I think Kirk is just going to be super. TV movie, safe, middle brow, you know, not real artistic vision.
Yeah, Glenn, because you were pretty determined when you were talking before the show about it. That's why I brought it up. Because
I thought
this is one of the more interesting ones, and rather than the more obvious ones in terms of clashes that we're talking about.
Yeah, I remember the submarine disaster when I was quite younger, and I remember the media spectacle that played out around it. I'm very curious of how they will interpret the political events surrounding that film and the diplomacy that went on between a number of the countries in light of the very modern political context where a lot of those diplomatic relations are still very fraught. Regarding XY Chelsea, I'm sight unseen. That subject has got a lot of coverage through popular culture, television, through news media. I haven't read up too much about the film. I would be hesitant because I would not want something that is a hagiography. Certainly it might not be, but certainly it has the potential to be very praiseworthy as opposed to too strongly objectively questioning the actions of Chelsea Manning and those surrounding her. I'm happy to be convinced. I'm going to read up more about the film, but that is why I would probably opt for a thriller about a subject I'm very interested in rather than something that has been very saturated through a lot of the current press.
Chris, you don't like Chelsea Manning, but you might want to see XY Chelsea. Why? Why would you make that mistake?
Well, it really depends on the perspective that the filmmaker is going to take on the issue. if it's just going to be, as Glenn was saying, a hagiography of Chelsea Manning, then no, I'm not interested. But I think there's definitely a lot of room for interesting drama in her story. I mean, how many people know that recently she was courting attention from right-wing groups?
No, I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know at all.
Yeah, so there's a lot of room for interest in the story. But, yeah, Kursk, I think, is going to be just flattened down, middle brow, like Oscar bait / TV movie, somewhere in the middle of the softest extremes.
Okay. So that is early Tuesday evening. Is anyone seeing the Martin Scorsese Bob Dylan documentary, which has Martin Scorsese's name in the title, Rolling Thunder Review?
No.
I don't know, because
Martin Scorsese presents Martin Scorsese's Rolling Thunder Review. Martin Scorsese film by Martin Scorsese.
Is Martin Scorsese involved?
Because that's clashing with a movie that I want to see, Present Perfect, which is part of the Flux program, and it's using a lot of the kind of real-life footage from China and putting it all together in terms of a kind of video essay style, which is a favorite of a publication that I used to write for, or still write for from time to time, named in an aspect ratio that we're not going to mention. I think
16 by 9.
I love 16 by 9.
Yeah, they're wonderful aspect ratio to watch movies in. But yeah, so it's an interesting thing because isn't the Scorsese one coming out on Netflix pretty much the next day?
Soon. I think there's an imminent release for that one.
Yeah.
So just like be aware that a lot of these films will get a commercial release not long afterwards.
Particularly not
some
that
of the
many.
Ones.
Well, the Netflix one and Amazing...
I Am Mother.
Yeah, Amazing Grace.
The Almodovar film will get a release, but it'll be sometime later, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
Which is why I feel like Present Perfect seems to be the kind of thing which would otherwise... you wouldn't get to see. Not sure if it's going to be good or bad, but I'm trying this year consciously at the festival to see things which I wouldn't otherwise get to see. And which is why I feel I'm seeing less, but I'm happier in the things I'm choosing to see.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
No, I'm trying to do a mix of... I do want to see all the genre stuff, but I want to be selective in terms of... And it's actually just getting recommendations from people. Usually you go through every film and say, this, I want to see this and that. If someone's seeing something or if someone says, hey, this looks really good or is really great, hey, I'll take a chance. It's one of the best opportunities to take a chance because you're more likely to get something of quality that you wouldn't otherwise see
take
and
a
that is generally
on
good.
Me. Okay, sorry, that's my ABBA reference for the night.
And is there anything documentary at this? No, I don't think there is. We just had Eurovision. We've had all the
ABBA. Give me a movie after midnight.
Only two movies playing after midnight this year. Damn it. They should do a lot more films after midnight. So on to Wednesday. I'm seeing Her Smell that night. I think some of us are checking out Never Look Away, the film from the director of The Lives of Others. And Monos is playing on the Tuesday. Excuse me.
Monos, The Hands of Fate.
Can you imagine? It's actually a painful watch, that film. It's really terrible.
Monos.
No, The Hands of Fate. I haven't seen Monos yet. I will be getting into it.
The interesting clash there with Her Smell is La Pointe Court, which is screening at the Art Gallery of New South Wales. Because it's a
great
film festival.
I wouldn't say that she'd quite reached the level of mastery yet, but La Pointe Court is a really interesting and creative film from Agnès Varda. The lightness of touch, her amazing photography, and her ambition with regard to structure and perspective all on show in that film.
In case people don't know, SFF is doing a Agnès Varda retrospective called Viva Varda, where they're showing at least 10 of her films. If you haven't seen an Agnès Varda film, then change it. Actually, because her style of filmmaking is fantastic and probably one of the few times you can get to see so many of her films on the big screen. And it's
there's some of the harder-to-watch films of hers that they've included as
part of this selection.
It's fantastic. And, I would definitely recommend, if you do have a gap and you feel like this is something that you may want to see, and you have a Varda film clashing with that, I would say pick a Varda film. It's going to, I wouldn't say change your life, but it's going to definitely kind of...
Good movies, folks.
Yeah, oh yeah. Like,
very
humanistic.
It's nice and safe to just pick an older film that you know you'll like instead of some risky, dodgy art house curiosity.
Like with La Pointe Court from Clear to 5 to 7, like, you can't go wrong.
Vagabond.
I actually take a very different view.
You've got to check that out.
View on this. I'm of the view that, look, I mean, I will see a retrospective film if it really was one that has attention or did blow me away when I first saw it, but... with retrospectives, I like taking chance on things new. I appreciate that I may not have an opportunity to see one of these films that have screened decades ago or even see that film on the big screen. But I like, in a film festival dominated by contemporary content, I like to see contemporary content and prioritize that. So,
guys, we're back at calling films content. Sorry.
And having, having said that, I do want to see The Babadook by Jennifer Kent, which is playing as part of the 10 Australian female trailblazers strand, and because her other film, The Nightingale, which I'm seeing on Sunday night, it has its New South Wales premiere at the Sydney Film Festival, and that looks really good.
Oh yeah, The Nightingale is clashing with Hail Satan, which is an interesting clash, actually.
Oh, yeah, only on the Monday night, on the Sunday night at the Ritz, but Hail Satan, yeah, this is about that group who...
Satan worshippers by Penny Lane, if I'm not mistaken.
In a lot of who got the makers of Sabrina the Teenage Witch in a lot of trouble for using their iconography in the show quite prominently.
It's a very interesting clash, and I think two very different looks at, you know, Nightingale is going to be, you know, spooky, gritty and stuff, and Hail Satan is going to be quite tongue-in-cheek. So, actually, it's a very interesting clash. I wouldn't say good or bad, but very different tastes and how you're feeling that night. But I would say, I would almost go with Hail Satan, because I feel like you need a bit of tongue-in-cheek fun in a festival circuit, which, you know, you don't get as much.
Speaking of that Monday night, we're all seeing High Life, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, played in the... Yeah, you haven't booked tickets. Book tickets, because that will sell out.
Okay, that's not even a clash. I mean, I wouldn't say any other film against it. Don't watch it. Just see that.
Yeah, so we've got a lot of the program. A couple of things I'm seeing on the weekend. I'm talking about Trees, the Sudanese documentary about a number of local patrons who want to set up a theatre.
Oh, yeah, the second weekend already? Or?
Oh, no, this is the... No, sorry, This is playing again during the week, but it screens initially on the Sunday. Daniel Isn't Real is also screening the night we're up to, and which screens first on the weekend, which is the film starring Patrick Schwarzenegger as part of the Freak Me Out. We're up to Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Which is 13th? Is it
Wednesday the 12th? No. 12th, what is everyone seeing on Wednesday? Is anyone doing synonyms?
I am the synonyms session in the morning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is the film from the director of the original Israeli The Kindergarten Teacher, which I don't know too much about.
I understand that it was better than the original Kindergarten Teacher. And the synonyms won the Golden Bear at Berlin. He's a director I've never checked out before, but I've been hearing good things for a while. And yeah, as long as I can get there by 9:30 a.m., should be okay.
Which is why I'm seeing synonyms on the Monday of that week at 1:45, and then doing Untouchable and High Life. So I'm seeing it that Monday is going to be... pretty epic for me.
That's gonna be very packed.
I've asked Glenn to bring me some condiments. Is what condiments? What should I call, like, edibles? I don't know. Food.
I cook food.
I don't know.
I cook food. We're gonna
None
share some
above.
Food. Yes.
Yes, Glenn. Bring me your condiments and your edibles.
I do an amazing tomato, tuna, baked bean, pineapple lettuce dish.
What?
Yeah.
That
strange.
That made no sense.
So what am I seeing tonight? Ghost Town Anthology and Dirty Guard, which you talked about last week. Oh. The film which is playing in the competition. But yes, we will be. If you see me, I should have some snacks. So come say hi, and they always have stuff, tiny teddies and whatnot. Thursday
is interesting because we have the Berlinale Best Actors winners. They're from China. So Long, My Son. Against the Varda, Cleo from 5 to 7, which is interesting.
And Judy and Punch, the Mimi Wasikowska and Damien Herron film.
I don't think that should be watched at all.
What?
I don't think it's a clash. I think it's just, no.
Looks
don't go there.
It's a story about the original Judy Punch folktale?
Yeah, great. Good for them. Good for the folktale.
I like Mimi Wasikowska. I mean, if she's been doing great projects lately, certainly Piercing, which we watched together.
Yes, and we did.
And the Rob Pattinson film from last year at MIFF, what's it called?
The Western. I'm forgetting the name.
I'm liking...
It was terrible. That was a terrible movie where nothing happened, right? That's right.
Look, I think
it's a more hit and miss. I don't think I would call her projects interesting. I think she's just got lucky sometimes.
She didn't get lucky with Piercing. She made a good choice with Piercing. I'm keen for it. I want to check it out during the festival. Has anyone seen Why Didn't You Just Die, the Russian Freak Me Out one?
No, I'm seeing on Thursday night a film called Saturday Afternoon, which may sound
That's
confusing.
Not confusing at all.
At Dendi Upper Keys, which is banned in Bangladesh because it's talking about the horrors of a terrorist attack. I know that sounds terrible and just like Hotel Mumbai, but I'm trying and hoping that that's not the case, but I may be wrong again. This does not have Dev Patel, so there's hope.
So much hate for Dev Patel on the show. Is this the one-shot film?
Yes.
I'm curious. Yeah. It's interesting. I know it's a very different subject matter, but didn't you draw a parallel that there have been a number of these films, one-shot films, that have been released over the past few years? Victoria played at the Sydney Film Festival a few years ago. The film that played at Revelation Underground Film Festival, I can't remember the exact name. And there was the...
That little scene...
The little scene which started it all, yeah. And the Netflix film about Breivik, which I haven't watched.
The Netflix film is actually not in one shot. There was a Paul Greengrass more traditional docudrama film for Netflix, and there was a Norwegian film which was shot in one shot. Saturday Morning reminds me of the concept of the Norwegian film very much so.
You gonna be catching
Saturday
it?
Afternoon? Though.
Saturday afternoon. Sorry.
Sorry.
Maybe I'm considering catching that on the Monday. I think it is.
Okay. So it's interesting. Friday, it's going to be fun.
We're all doing Jim Jarmusch, Dead Don't Die.
Yes.
I think it's going to be bad.
Okay, yeah. the reviews have been uniform. They've all said it's funny, but it's dour, that it's too self-serious for a comedy.
But that's Jim Jarmusch.
Yeah, that's why I'm wondering.
But there's a magic when Jim Jarmusch gets it right. I don't think this sounds like one of his better films, because...
This sounds like he's appealing to his fuckboy demographic, and there's a certain fuckboy demographic that loves Jim Jarmusch.
No, Jarmusch is not for frat boys. What the hell are we talking about?
I don't think
here?
So at all. But, I mean, his appeal is the Patterson crowd.
No, here is what's good about Jim Jarmusch, in my opinion. Okay, that was definitely the setup for a pretentious pronouncement.
We are content connoisseurs, Chris, yeah. So it's okay.
I think that Jarmusch is at his best when he's pursuing a kind of romanticism. Like, there's a touch of irony, but it's not overtaking everything. If you think even back to something like Down by Law, it stops to appreciate the beauty. And I think there's not going to be much beauty in The Dead Don't Die.
That's what I was trying to get at. I think, yeah. You know, I'm just saying when he... is appealing to his worst impulses. That's when...
Just cynicism. He,
yeah, that's when I think the frat boy love comes out, because I feel the frat boy love is... I think there is a certain demographic.
You know, frat boys, yeah, they just love Dead Man.
Patterson, this contemplative film.
I'm hanging out with my bros.
You'd be surprised.
And we're talking about broken flowers.
It happened with Richard Linklater and Everybody Wants Some. So
that's a very different film. Can you imagine? Like, I'm from Patterson. Here's my poems.
No, Patterson was a good Jarmusch film. We're not talking about Patterson. Patterson was quite romantic, lovely, and kind of like, you know, heartfelt, which is rare in general. Not for a Jarmusch film. Rare in general as for films go. Anyway, we shall not debate the point any further for Jarmusch fans, which are too many in the studio.
They're all frat
too many
boys.
In the studio. Yeah, we're
too
frat, boys.
Frat boys.
Yeah, woo. Yeah, frat. Alpha something something.
Go sports.
Yeah.
but right
sports
after...
Sports are great, Chris.
Right after Dead Don't Die is Baccarat, which is going to be a nice double with Dead Don't Die on that night.
Genre of throwbacks. I've seen this film apparently tips its head to John Carpenter.
Interesting.
Because that's clashing with High Life at the Ritz that night. So.
Oh, I'm seeing Baccarat.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because Baccarat has a session the morning after, which is appearing and disappearing.
As of the time of our recording this on Tuesday night, is it back on the app?
No, but it was there and then it disappeared.
It's vanished, but they haven't put out a message saying they've cancelled this session. So let's hope this is a glitch that will soon be reversed, because I'm pretty sure I had tickets to that session.
Yeah, me too. And then and then suddenly it disappeared. So I was like, I need to see this. So I just booked this other one. But hopefully magic happens and they reverse that decision, whichever gods of Sydney Film Festival they are.
Okay. So we had to the gods of Sydney Film Festival just asked Nishen next week. He certainly has some control over this.
Yep.
Let's not worry him with like our petty scheduling issues.
So this is damn straight. Petty scheduling issue.
We're giving them
a
money.
State theater session vanished from the program.
Yeah, like the state theater... are locked out. Like, there's 12 days where it's just Sydney Film Festival. Surely they want that revenue and, like, hundreds of thousand odd people filling the train beneath them for those 2 hours. Like,
that's true.
They want people there. Moving on to Saturday, who's seeing Monrovia, Indiana, the new film from Weissman, who gave us the Libraries documentary last year?
Ex Libris.
He gave us more. He's one of the most legendary documentary directors of all time.
It's interesting because on the Saturday you have Monrovia, Indiana, and also Minor History, which is an interesting clash, and also Honeyland, which is screening that morning. Very, very interesting, because Honeyland won the...
World Cinema Grand Jury Prize at Sundance, yes. Yeah.
And that shot really well. So is Monrovia, Indiana, which I've seen, thankfully. That shot really, really well.
Okay.
And it's wonderfully, like, you know, if you're looking for clean, crisp, and breathtaking cinematography, see that. And so is Walden, which is also shot really well. So if you have a Saturday morning and just want to see calm movies that just take you on a journey and just make you feel, beautiful filmmaking.
I'm watching a lot of Freak Me Out stuff. That actually sounds really nice. Speaking of which, there's a film we haven't talked about, which is just 13 shots of the environment, with slow pans, which looks very contemplative. I think Chris is catching this one. I can't quite remember the name.
Walden.
Oh, so that is...
That is Walden.
13 360-degree camera pans.
Right. Getting titles confused. Yes, that is right. So that is the Saturday. San Antango's playing again. I'm seeing Sybil in the Afternoon, as commented earlier. I'm seeing Children of the Sea, the Japanese anime, on the Sunday. That looks really fun. I quite liked the anime, the single anime that played last year. So I'm looking forward to that.
But on Saturday night, you also have the other big clash, which
Standing
is
Up for Sunny.
Pain and Glory versus Parasite.
Ooh, I'm seeing Parasite the following day because I really like Bong Joon-ho, and Chris's favorite, so we'll have to catch that. But I'm catching On Dog that night, which is a fantasy murder mystery in Mongolia, which has really looks like it has a really cool
intriguing
setup.
Intriguing. I did not. Okay. Wow.
I've never seen a Mongolian film, so this is my try something new.
Yeah.
Give it a go.
I will be at the engagement party for my best friend.
Oh, lovely.
And I have to give a best man speech. A best man speech. This is the practice best man speech.
Tell him it's Sydney Film Festival, Virat.
So I won't be able to do Saturday night. So that's the evening that I've blocked out, even though I had told him to hold his engagement on any other day. But he said, no, I can't do that, Virat, because I have other people to respond to. So he did not listen to me. But me being a good friend and just...
You are.
A lovely person in general, because I'm so amazing. I said, I will sacrifice my Sydney Film Festival evening for you. And it's not really that big a sacrifice, but it should be okay.
There are things outside the Sydney Film Festival and film generally.
I mean, I've taken time off work for this. So imagine I'm taking actual annual leave to watch the Sydney Film Festival. This is how
a lot of my friends do. Yeah. A lot of my friends do. I have a friend, Nitsa, who has been going to the festival for over 30 years, and she takes the week off and sees about 40 films. She absolutely loves it. So she's been going all the way back to the 70s, and she adores it. And it's also during the long weekend. So if you're going to have time off and you just want to spend 2 weeks of your life just in a dark room with friends and strangers watching movies, you know, it's actually a really nice environment.
Yeah, it is. But we're hoping some of the ones that we want to see, Chris, get picked up in Melbourne, which is including Malik and some of the other ones.
Some of these might be coming to the late editions.
I don't think Malik would make it. Okay, actually, let's have a wager. Let's have a wager right
Fox
now.
Fox Searchlight have the rights.
I know.
Fox decide.
But
they
I would say
it,
Malik.
It makes it easy for
Malik
them to do business with.
Malik is for Melbourne and not for Sydney. How about? Do you want to bet on this one?
I'm not willing to lose money.
Sports.
Over it.
No. Sports. Sports. Sports.
No. This is just
don't be sports.
Cinephile wager.
Right. Your bet will be paid. Sorry, Chris. Your bet will be paid out early, and you'll still win.
I'll say that Malik will probably only show up in Melbourne, but there's a chance of Sydney.
I agree.
Yep.
No chance of Sydney, only Melbourne. Which means that we're making a trip to Melbourne, Chris. Think about the good side.
I don't know if I need to. I feel like this is going to be like a Boxing Day release with a pretty major push behind it.
Hidden Life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is an Oscar movie.
It's the Oscar movie.
We shall
movie.
See. Yep. Well, apparently it is seen to be much more... narrative focused than most Malik.
Fox Searchlight wouldn't have spent that money on it if they didn't think that this has potential. And it's not going to be as alienating as Malik's films usually are. Like, if you say, what is Knight of Cups or what is Song to Song about? Yeah, some rich guy who's sad versus, this movie is about a guy who was executed for refusing to fight for the Nazis. It's like,
And he's sad.
It pre-builds dramatic stakes again.
And the one scene that has been released is beautifully rendered.
It looks like Malik's technique at the top of his game, yeah.
And I'm a big detractor of Malik, but this looks stunning.
Yeah.
You're a big detractor of Malik?
Sure.
How are you on this show?
We've talked about this.
But even you've liked some Malik stuff, like The New World.
I like The New World,
I think you'd like Thin Red Line very
much. Yeah, I thought you liked Thin Red Line.
I haven't seen it in such a long time.
Right.
I'll give it another go.
We need to change this, Chris.
Is anyone seeing Dark Place on the Saturday night, the world's first ever indigenous horror anthology?
No.
I am.
Oh, God. Okay.
It might be good, but it's a bunch of Australian directors I've never heard of. What are the chances it's going to be good?
I'm giving it a go. I like horror. It's a world premiere. That's harsh.
Sorry.
That was super hard.
So you're not seeing Hearts and Bones, new Criv Stenders film?
I don't think... Look, the name Criv Stenders doesn't carry special weight for me, so...
And Hearts and Bones? The new Hugo Weaving Ben Lawrence film? Anyone catching that one?
Maybe.
Okay, I don't know. I may weave some space for it.
So we've gone through the whole program. Last thing is predictions for closing night. I think it might be The Lighthouse.
No.
It's going to be an Australian film. Like last year, Hearts Beat Loud was the last
Australian,
year.
Though.
Was it not?
No. Nick Offerman.
Star Tony Collette. Somebody Australian.
Look.
Has to have an Australian connection.
Right. I think it won't be The Lighthouse because they'll want something agreeable. Not The Lighthouse is an intense... cinematic vision for people who are into intense cinematic visions.
But
I think they
you might
like
have a similar kind of thing,
the red carpet,
which happened with Song to Song, where
closing night.
But I think
film.
A similar sort of thing might happen with Song to Song. Yeah, but people thought, oh my god, Robert Pattinson, it might be a really commercial movie. Oh my god, all these fans, his teenage fans might come out and then be like, oh my god, what is this movie?
That can happen for High Life already.
I think there's been a shift. Like everything post. Childhood Leader, even before that,
he was very good in Childhood of Luda.
Everything post Cosmopolis, the fact is that crowd have grown up to the point that they're not so endeared for a great degree to Twilight anymore. Yeah. So I remember whenever you would tweet something about a Robert Pattinson film, it'd get 50 retweets immediately. That's
Robert Pattinson
fans.
Contingent.
That's changed, and it's simply because that crowd has moved on in their taste to a great degree. As has Robert Pattinson, his films have got increasingly eclectic and moved fully from the commercial world into a lot of very good art house
and
content.
Now he's going to be both Batman and the lead of Christopher Nolan's new film.
Oh my god, he's Batman. What is
Batman,
he's Warner Brothers' Golden Boy, it seems.
Batman.
Is it? I don't know how I feel about Robert Pattinson as Batman.
He's having
I'm willing to be convinced.
Like, he's genuinely having an amazing career.
But
look,
it's
really impressive. He's 32. Let's never forget this. The guy's 32 years old.
He's becoming a new, DiCaprio under our noses.
But imagine that. Imagine, being Batman in the Nolan's... Yeah. Being Nolan's fanboy and being Batman, he can then pick any art house project that he wants, and he can keep doing stuff like Charlotte Felita.
He'll be very picky. He'll work with your Scorsese's and your Malick's and, your directors like that. He'll be working with Spielberg.
Who can
and
work
such,
with
and Nolan.
Malick
he's,
and
he's
Nolan?
He's going to use the Tom Cruise Magnolia ever of his career.
Definitely.
And then he'll
or Brad Pitt around mid-2000s when he started to get very picky with what films he would do.
Brad Pitt.
So that is our Sydney Film Festival coverage for this week. You can buy flexi passes, come find us, get involved, pick something you haven't seen before, and we'll be back next week talking more Sydney.
And if
Sydney
you
want to
reach out and be like, hey, I'm sad or alone and I want to see a film.
Come and see a film with us at Sydney Film
Fest.
Seriously, reach out.
We would love to.
Come to sushi or something with us afterwards.
There's little pies
at the Hub.
If they have them this year.
They
better, or else I'm going to flip furniture. I'm going to yell, cinema will never die, even if you try to kill it. And then the security guards will pull me out of the room and they'll say, what was all that about?
But
and I'll say, it's because you didn't have the pies. And he'll say, damn it, I knew we needed those to keep the film fans in check. And that's how my Sydney Film Festival is shaping up to be.
But before that, before the Sydney Film Festival experience happens, we have on the 1st of June at Sydney Town Hall, Spike Lee, the actual Spike the Lee, coming.
Lee Spike?
What? Yeah, Spike Lee is here.
For what?
Vivid Ideas or whatever that means.
Ideas
talk. What it means is you just won an Oscar, so we've decided you're worth giving a speech at our prestigious town hall.
And if he doesn't swear at the town hall, I'm going to be disappointed.
Look, if you're going
to... Town hall, you motherfucker!
If you're going to see something
Mother
at Lovin. Vivid, it's annoying that this takes place during Sydney Film Festival, but last year, it's happening again this year, the FreshFlix Film Festival takes place as part of Vivid on the top floor of the MCA, so you watch a bunch of short films, and there is a gorgeous backdrop of the lights. This is on, I think it's the 6th of June. It's either the Friday or Saturday Sydney Film Festival, which is very annoying. Mm. Last year was the week before. The person who won last year, Ren Thak, was actually on the show, who was the winner in 2017 of SF3, and she was the winner of FreshFlix 2018. So they have a really good lineup. It's a Claudia Pickering's festival, and she produced and directed and starred in Frisky, the film we reviewed about a year ago.
Yes, and I remember that. And she was really funny.
Yes, if you want to see something vivid that's not Sydney Film Festival, check out FreshFlix. And yeah, and if you are going to Denny Opera Keys, just be careful with the vivid crowd because you won't be able to run so quickly between Denny Opera Keys.
Dangerous. Yeah. They may be brandishing weapons.
No. What I've done...
Selfie sticks. Oh my God, they're everywhere.
Cameras can be pretty significant weapons if they're swung with enough
force. What I've done...
John Wick 4, which has been announced today.
As, yeah.
Oh my God. May 21st, 2021, 2 years to the date.
What I've done this year is that I've booked my Denny Opera Keys sessions back-to-back for the day. So I start in the morning and I don't leave until dead of night, pretty much. So I don't have to go anywhere except Denny Opera Keys Cinema 1 to Denny Opera Keys Cinema 2. That's all the kind of walking I'm doing, thankfully. That's my way of avoiding the vivid peoples. The people. The people's court.
Just speaking of a couple of Australian films quickly, is anyone seeing Suburban Wildlife or Slam?
No.
Slam, yes. I am seeing Slam because also I'm interviewing the director of the film. But also there's going to be an actual poetry slam at the Sydney Film Festival Hub right after the screening, which I feel is very interesting. It's a very interesting cultural shift for the Sydney Film Festival that, you know, a poetry slam is happening at the Hub.
Yeah, that is cool.
I did not expect that.
I would not be surprised if it's more interesting than the film.
Look, I've been to the one in Bankstown, and I've seen a couple of performers perform at other events, including one I ran, and they're generally really great.
No,
I'd recommend
slam,
it. It's going to be a really fun thing to check out.
The poetry slam section in the film are also very good. It's going to be interesting, I think. And also just the experience of having a poetry slam at, you know, Sydney Town Hall, Lower Town Hall Hub is, I think, pretty significant in terms of a cultural shift and what people expect programming to be, because usually that's the hub of quite elitist, snobbish filmmakers.
Are any of you guys interested in seeing the Afters films, Sequin in a Blue Room or Suburban Wildlife?
I'm thinking about Suburban Wildlife. Hmm. My sister worked with the director, Imogen McCluskey.
Cool.
So, focusing that one, I'm not sure if I'll be able to fit in Sequin in the Blue Room, just with timing.
Mm. Both of these films are, for those who don't know, films made by AFTERS recent graduates or students. And the rights to them are owned by AFTERS, so it's an AFTERS contribution to the festival.
A lot of AFTERS films are filmed, no disparagement on AFTERS, in the one recognizable studio. I made a couple of films there myself, so I'm curious if that like one window corridor set will be in this.
I think it's a safe bet.
For the uninitiated, AFTERS, aka Australian Film Television Radio School. Thank me later, or don't.
So Game of Thrones is streaming everywhere now. The Sydney Film Festival is running from the 5th to the 16th of June.
Just so you know, Glenn, Game of Thrones no longer exists.
Oh, it's done?
It's finished.
I just always thought Game of Thrones was like a post-apocalyptic version of our world set 10,000 years in the
future. Maybe the real Game of Thrones.
Starbucks is actually operating in this world.
And a water bottle. They found a water bottle in this episode.
How did they manage to do that two times in one season?
It's really... I mean, the actor must have known the water bottle. It's like the gladiator mistake. It's the exact same as the gladiator mistake.
The actor doesn't know that the camera is picking it up, though. The actor might assume this must be a close-up because surely someone else would have... But even still,
you just be careful. You just don't. It's actually the Starbucks cup was more symbolic of the issues with the show on
Glenn,
so many levels.
Glenn, maybe the real Game of Thrones were the friends we made along the way.
Did we make friends along the way, or did they all die?
Well,
I made many friends talking and watching about Game of Thrones, and
thankfully, most of them are alive. I don't know about all of them, but yeah, most of them. No red weddings for us in real life yet.
So that is our coverage of Game of Thrones. I hope your friend's wedding in a couple of weeks is not the red or purple wedding. And I'm sure it will not be, because I'd like to see you again. And
that's all right. I may be the lucky one. Who knows?
And we'll be back next week. Have a wonderful night. Enjoy movies. This has been Glenn Falconstein, Chris Evans, and Virat Nehru. Thank you for subscribing to the podcast and for listening. Good night.
Love content. Bye.